What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Movies Chat. My name is Eric Davis, and Fraggle Rock is finally becoming a movie, we think. Of course, we've heard this before. A feature film version of Jim Henson's Fraggle Rock has been in the works as far back as 2005, and since then, it's changed hands a few times, settling down more recently with Jim Bickett and Alex Munoz-Jian, who worked on Gore Verbinski's Wrangle, and they'll write the new script for New Regency. Will they be successful? Will we see a Fraggle Rock movie? And would a Fraggle Rock movie even work for today's movie-going audience? Joining me to talk about these things and more is Keith Calder. Keith is a film producer behind movies like All the Boys Love Mandy Lane, The Wackness, Thunder Soul, the greatest movie ever sold, and one of this year's best horror movies, in my opinion, You're Next. You can also find him writing on his personal website, keithcalder.com. Keith, how are you?
I'm very good. Very good. That's a very kind introduction.
Thanks for being here. So let's kind of dive in. I know our memories of Fraggle Rock are a little fuzzy, but what are your earliest memories of Fraggle Rock? How did you kind of experience this show?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in London, and I lived in the UK basically right when Fraggle Rock was at its peak. And I don't know if you know this, but Fraggle Rock was one of the first, and certainly I think the only one of Henson's projects where it was really an international production. Like, they actually shot it in Canada for all the puppet segments, and so I'm getting somewhere with this, which is that all of the live action elements, they actually reshot for each country that it was big in. And so I actually watched a different Fraggle Rock growing up in London than you watched in the US, because all the Fraggle stuff would be the same, but all the stuff with humans from what I understand in the US was like an inventor and his dog or something like that.
Yeah.
And in the UK, it was actually a guy living with the same dog character, but in a lighthouse.
Okay.
So my association of Fraggle Rock is this British lighthouse that has, like, you know, caves underneath it, and the Fraggles are there. Anyway, it's a weird situation, which I think we'll get into on the film, but that every country actually had a slightly different Fraggle Rock.
That is interesting, because in the U.S., I came into it as early HBO. You know, this is before
–
I grew up in Manhattan, and we were one of the first people to have kind of pay cable. And I mean, I was a little kid at the time, so TV was TV. I didn't really understand. I was like, okay, this is on this channel HBO. And then I didn't really realize until I moved from Manhattan to Staten Island. And Staten Island, the entire island, didn't even have cable yet.
Oh, yeah.
And I went to my mom. I'm like, well, I can't watch Fraggle Rock. She's like, yeah, well, I'm sorry. They don't have HBO here. And that was my first sense of cable being like this different entity. And I freaked out because I couldn't watch Fraggle Rock. And so it was something that I think, at least in my neck of the woods, not a lot of kids, not a lot of my friends, like none of my friends watched it, I remember, when I moved to Staten Island, because they didn't have HBO. So unless you had this, you know, this new thing, this new HBO, a lot of kids in the U.S. weren't experiencing Fraggle Rock. But once I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, because in the U.K., it was on I think it was on ITV, which was basically one of the three channels. So it was you know, if you were a kid in London in the 80s or in the U.K., you probably watched Fraggle Rock. It's a totally different level of exposure. And if I remember correctly, the theme song from Fraggle Rock actually was a successful record in the U.K. Like, it played on the radio, even.
Yeah. I mean, I was in researching a little bit more of Fraggle Rock before our conversation. I think it reached number 33 on the British music charts.
Ah, well, that makes sense.
And, you know, to kind of segue into the film, and I could see why they want to make this a film, because, you know, international audiences are becoming a big part of movie making now, and a lot of people are talking about how because they're releasing blockbusters abroad before the U.S. So this could be a really big hit worldwide. I think especially in places like the UK, where it was a lot more accessible than it was in the United States. And so that could be one of the main reasons why they really want to get this off the ground. But they can't seem to get it off the ground. I mean, what do you know, as a producer, you look at this property, you know, is it accessible for today's audience? Do you see it translating? And how come it's taking so long?
I mean, my take on Fraggle Rock, again, this is from the memories of, you know, 20-something years ago, is that it was a profoundly weird show. I think it had very bizarre storylines. It had a strange assortment of characters. And it felt like a internally consistent world, but not one that really made sense in any other universe. Because it was essentially there's the Fraggles, the Doozers, there's this entire fantasy world that doesn't feel like it's related to any other concept of fantasy. Like it's not like elves and things that you have a familiarity with. Like Fraggles is just totally weird.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think that it's a tough. I would imagine it's a tough thing to adapt. It doesn't have a straightforward storyline. It doesn't have a straightforward sense of characters. I think there was a sense of maybe it's Gogo or Gobo or something was kind of the main Fraggle character. But it's. I would imagine it's a very, very tricky property to adapt into a film.
Yeah, I mean, to catch people up, if you're not familiar with Fraggle Rock, Fraggle Rock ran from about 1983 to 1987 on these different networks abroad, and it centered on these Fraggle characters who lived in caves, and they kind of had their own world, and we think it might be like this alternate dimension. Their outer, quote-unquote, outer space is our real world, and within these caves, there are different races of creatures. There are the Fraggles, there are the Doozers, and there the Gorgs. I believe those are the three main ones. And there's a lot of spirituality, and there's environmental themes and themes of personal identity. I mean, Jim Henson was a weird dude. We know this.
Yeah.
I think The Muppets was his most accessible. That's kind of what he, when he created the Muppets, he said, okay, this is what is going to make me a rich man. And that's why we've seen the Muppets franchise kind of flourish. Fraggle Rock was his kind of, I'm going to get really crazy now. And I think one of the reasons why I fell in love with it as a kid is because there was so much imagination there.
Yes. Yeah.
And there was just so much, there was so much to relate to, because even though these were brand new characters in this world that, you've never seen before, all of the characters had traits that you related to. One was the leader. One was a little bit more spiritual. One was kind of a bozo, one was a little bit more athletic, and you kind of have all these characters that you can relate to. And there were just a lot of cool ideas, like when they laid down and if their heads touched, they were able to share dreams. They had this big trash heap that they went to for advice, to kind of teach them about things. And there was this cool like symbiosis of nature, especially with radishes. I remember that each race used radishes in different ways. The Doozers would use radishes to build their little constructions. The Fraggles would eat the radishes. And the Gorgs grew the radishes in order to create, so that they wouldn't be – they had to eat the radishes so they didn't become invisible. I mean, there were the trippiest concepts with this show.
Yeah, it definitely felt like a – I would imagine it's hard to adapt to because the feeling of the show is – it almost feels like jazz improvisation. Like they would just come up with these ideas and these sort of creature dynamics – throw them all against the wall and kind of just see what happens.
Yeah.
It definitely felt that way. I mean, there was the whole Uncle Traveling Matt. If I remember, there was that guy that it was like a Fraggle you barely ever see, but there's always this running thing of he's out in the real world in what they call, I guess, outer space, sending postcards back from his adventures. And there's a very almost unconnected episodic nature to what's going on, because there's the sense of what happens with the human and his dog. There's the sense of what's going on with the weird monster? The Gorgs?
Yeah, the Gorgs. Yeah,
yeah.
Giants. They have their own weird kind of thing going on. I mean, each of these races has their own mythology, which I think is fun. I mean, I look at this property and I say, okay, how do they adapt this for modern audiences? And I mean, I look at characters like the Doozers and I see the Minions from Despicable Me, but I see I see them. They have more depth, the Doozers, and they have a more interesting mythology. So that's kind of how I see these properties. I know that one of the earlier versions of the script is they kind of wanted to smurf it up, and make it so like the Fraggle movie is the Fraggles venturing into into our world. You know, and I think that might be the most accessible way for them to kind of, you know, bring it to audiences today, because we have these brand new characters that we've never ever seen, but, you know, but they're in our world. So it's easier for us to relate to that. Do you think that that is the best way to approach it?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I would say on a commercial level, I could see why that feels like a smart approach. I think that, you know, Alvin and the Chipmunks and Smurfs essentially do the same thing.
Yeah.
It seems to work commercially. Creatively, it's not something I'm that into, but it seems like kids seem to like that these days. I don't know if kids like the same... well, you know what? I would say that I think that kids like that same weirdness that Fraggle Rock had as a TV show, but they get it now more in video games and television. They have a lot of sources for that sort of just avant-garde weird goofiness.
Yeah.
And it seems like in the film world that the bets are a lot safer. Like that they'll go for that approach of, oh, Fraggle's entering into generic 30-year-old guy's life and changing it, and maybe they help him meet a girl and realize something about himself. And I you know, I would imagine that version, you know, it's so, I always feel terrible saying that something writes itself, but come on, that version is not the hardest thing to develop. I don't think it's necessarily a good idea, but I could see a studio making that movie.
Yeah, I could see it too. I mean, this was the I think the last version of it, but now they've brought these Rango guys on it, because I feel like, you know what, if you're going to adapt Fraggle Rock, stay in Fraggle Rock. I think there's so much, yeah, so many interesting things going on there. The relationship between the Fraggles, I mean, just the Doozers alone. And if these guys didn't pitch it this way, didn't pitch it as like, look, the Doozers could be our minions from the Despicable Me, because the minions from Despicable Me are becoming a franchise by themselves.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to have short films, and I wouldn't even be surprised if we see an animated spin-off show with the Minions. But the Doozers are really interesting characters. I mean, they live to build, you know, they're completely opposite from the Fraggles. They live to work, and they build these structures. And, you know, the Fraggles eat the structures, but they need the Fraggles to eat the structures so they can build more structures. And their whole life revolves around building these structures. And it's just really – they're just really interesting characters. And I think each of these races have such rich mythologies that can be explored on screen. But like you said, and it's interesting, that difference between television and film is that you can have these really obscure, weird television programs on Cartoon Network. And believe me, that network has enough of them. But you can't put those on film, really, because it's got to be more accessible. And I think that's probably where the weird kind of fine line they're drawing here. And that's maybe why they brought in the Rango guys, because, you know, Rango is kind of a weird, trippy animated film. But they made it accessible and it made a lot of money. And so I guess maybe these guys can do that with Fraggle Rock.
I think the trickiest thing is not so much the shift in medium from television to film, but really the shift in mindset. Because the truth is that Fraggle Rock was essentially a low-budget independent television show.
Yeah,
like it was the equivalent in the TV world of you know, a weird art house movie in the feature world. But that's not the way anyone's going to approach Fraggle Rock as a movie. They're going to approach it as a property that can be a kids, like a tentpole kids movie. It's like a Smurfs or one of those things. And I just don't think that the DNA of Fraggle Rock is that. So the question is, are they just going to create that whole cloth, which would require, to a certain degree, throwing out what makes Fraggle Rock Fraggle Rock? And the cynical side of me says that that's probably the more commercially successful approach, and probably what will happen. I think that, you know, the truth is Rango became Rango because Gore Verbinski demanded it that way.
Yeah.
I don't know who that person is on the Fraggle Rock movie who's going to be telling, if it's New Regency that's the rights, I don't know who's telling New Regency it has to be weird. And unless it's someone of the, you know, station of Gore Verbinski, it doesn't matter. You know, I'm sure these guys are fantastic and real strong creative people, but they're not the, you know, 1,000-pound gorilla that can push around the studio and make sure it happens the way they want it to happen.
Now, you're a producer on this movie. Are you fighting kind of those two mindsets of wanting to stay true to the spirit of Jim Henson and what he created, or are you thinking, how do I turn this into a worldwide brand where I can have spinoff, Pixar can do a film on the Doozers? Like, I mean, where is your head going? Are you fighting for the integrity of Fraggle Rock, or are you saying, how do we make this a brand?
I mean, the truth is, you know, you can look at my films and realize I'm the person that's fighting for the creative, and not necessarily the how do you make it, starting an entire new franchise and brand. You know, that said, I think that it's almost like the only point of doing a Fraggle Rock movie is to try to do that. You're sort of outside the realm of pure creative motivations once you're adapting a bizarro Jim Henson property into a big budget feature movie. Like, you're kind of already answering that question just by deciding to make the movie.
So I
don't know. I mean, I think as a producer, if I were, you know, hired by a studio to produce a Fraggle Rock movie, of course my priority would be, how do I make a movie that's commercially successful? But within that, it's interesting. You talk about the Minions characters. You know, Chris Meledandri, who ran Fox Animation for a long time and then left to start Illumination, which is the company that really made Despicable Me and those movies. His whole approach is basically building movies to build those types of characters.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what drew him to Ice Age and the, you know, the characters in Ice Age, and that's what drew the Despicable Me movies to those Minion characters. But the truth is, he's essentially a studio head. And as a studio head, he has a creative priority to make amazing, cool characters that kids love. I don't think that exists at New Regency. Like, I guess what I'm saying is, there isn't a John Lasseter, there isn't a Chris Meledandri, there isn't that person who is from the top down saying, here's where we want our quality to be, and this is, you know, our vision for how our studio makes movies is to make either amazing characters or tell amazing stories. Or there isn't that position. And I think just as a producer for hire, it's a very hard position to try to fill. You either need to have it come from the money side, from the studio side, or you need to have it come from a creative heavyweight. So, you know, that's where it comes from, the Gore Verbinski, or where it comes from the Steven Spielberg, or it comes from, you know, Brad Bird or someone like that. The danger on, or how it used to come from Jim Henson. But on this property, to my uneducated eye, it doesn't seem to have that that top-down creative stamp of quality, which I think on a commercial level might be fine. The truth is, I don't think the Smurfs movie had that either. It still made a whole bunch of movie, and it still made a whole bunch of kids laugh. I just don't think that... I think that 20 years from now, when people are talking about making another Smurfs movie, they're not going to be looking at this movie as source material. They're going to go back to the cartoon that people loved. You know what I mean? Like, it's the long-term value of a brand comes from people loving something, not from a quick cash grab. So if the idea is to build a long-term Fraggle Rock brand, you kind of have to make a good movie.
That's interesting. It's interesting perspective. I mean, so to kind of sum it up, do you think this version that they just announced with these guys writing it, do you think this is going to turn into a movie?
Who knows? I mean, honestly, there's no possible way to answer that question because there are movies that I assume are definitely going to get made. You know, they're about to start shooting and they fall apart a week later. And there are movies that I think will never have a chance in hell of getting made, and someone decides to take a shot and they make it.
Do you want to see it? Do you want to see it? Do you want to see a Fraggle Rock movie?
I'm not the target audience for a Fraggle Rock movie anymore. I mean, if I saw it, it would be either because I believe in the creative team that end up being, you know, the driving force on it, or it'll be as a nostalgia thing to check out. And I'm honestly not driven by nostalgia to the box office. I know some people are, but for me, what's more likely is I would see there's a Fraggle Rock movie come out, and I would say, oh, I'm going to track down the old DVDs and watch those for nostalgia.
Yeah, and that's what parents should do, because I think, I mean, I know they're on, they might be on Netflix Instant. I know the television station Hub has been re-airing Fraggle Rock episodes, and I think if you're a parent and you have a young kid who's starting to watch these sorts of programs, maybe if they like the Muppets, Fraggle Rock just has so much imagination, and it was so, it just, I remember it having so much value, adding a lot to my life as a child, and it really allowed me to kind of explore my own imagination and kind of take it in places that I maybe wouldn't have thought of. And I think when we're being served kind of these very surface value animated films that are kind of easy to figure out, and I think Fraggle Rock is a show that you can show your kids and they'll get a lot of value from it. Would you agree?
I definitely agree. I mean, Fraggle Rock is I grew up and I was always a big fantasy geek, and I kind of loved worlds that with a big imagination, and I just love what a weird, unique thing Fraggle Rock was. I'm curious if I watched them as an adult, if they'd be good, or if it's just I remember loving them as a kid. I feel like the ideas are definitely good. There's a lot of good themes in there, and there's just a lot of weird visuals that I like the Doozers. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I feel like I would really respond to.
Yeah.
But I have literally no memory of storylines at all, which makes me suspect that the storylines may have not been that solid.
Yeah, they were a little weird. But Keith, what are you working on in your life, either professionally or personally, that you're excited about right now?
Sure. I mean, I just started a company with Morgan Spurlock. That's a commercial production company. Basically, represents directors doing commercials, ads on television and so on. And it's something I'd been thinking about doing for a while. And I produced Morgan's movie, The Greatest Movie Ever Sold, which has a lot of commercials kind of in the movie and working with brands. I just found it an interesting area, and I think that there's a lot of directors that I work with in feature filmmaking that I think could be making really cool promos and music videos and commercials. And it's a tough world for directors to break into, and I like Morgan's idea for kind of helping directors break into this world.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing. I mean, and as someone who kind of shares that content, we love finding commercials that are directed by filmmakers and sharing those with people. And I think it excites people to know that this commercial that they see on TV was really, made by someone that they're a big fan of, that they've seen their work before. So
it's definitely true. I think especially because with Morgan and the way we're approaching, it's a lot of independent directors or documentary directors where if they do a commercial for Southwest Airlines, more people will probably watch that commercial than all of the movies they've ever made.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's a way to get their voice to a bigger audience.
Cool. And before I let you go, I have to ask. I'm a big fan of your next. When do we get to see that? When does everybody else get to see this film?
I wish I had an answer to you. It's up to Lionsgate, and they're very passionate about the film, but they have a lot on their plate now with the Summit merger and the giant hit of Hunger Games. So they are juggling their schedule around and trying to figure out when to release it.
Cool. Well, hopefully we'll get to see it soon. I love the hell out of that film. Keith, thank you so much for joining me, and you're a great guy to talk to, and you have some really cool insights about the movie industry. So I will definitely be bringing you back on, at some point to discuss other things, but thank you very much. And I hope all is well with you.
Thank you, Eric. I'd be happy to come back.
Cool. Thanks, Keith.
All right. Bye.